Okay.
You ready?
House Committee on Revenue will come back to order. We were, when we left on public hearing on House Bill 767, and we're going to continue with that now. On the original sign-up, we still had Christina Martin and Stephen Cafori to go. So let's bring them forward. And it looks like we may have some more, huh? Please, go ahead.
Okay, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Christina Martin. I am a policy analyst with Cascade Policy Institute. I've edited my comments to try to avoid some redundancy. I know you've been very kind to extend the hearing. I find it strange, though, that this bill has made it this far because, you know, every other word I've been hearing out of Salem is that there's a budget problem. We all know there's a budget problem. And teachers are getting laid off in school districts, and municipalities are having budget problems. And so it's strange because this bill would put a cap on a substantial portion of charter schools, and charter schools educate students at a extremely efficient rate, and that it costs almost half of what it costs in a regular public school. Not that cost is the only issue, but as you've heard this morning, these virtual schools are providing an excellent education for a very good cost. And not only are they providing a good education, but they're also popular in Oregon. We had a public poll conducted by the Friedman Foundation, and they found that this is a nonpartisan issue, that the majority of Oregonians, Democrat, Republican, Independent, support virtual schools, yeah. And the majority of them want more educational choice. So whether that's charter school or just more options through tax credit programs and that sort of thing, the majority of Oregonians support this, and this is not a partisan issue. And some of you have implied that maybe a task force could look into this issue of virtual education and regulate this unknown problem. But I think parents know what's best for their children, and this is something that the market will fix. Actually, if we lift the 50% cap and allow even more virtual schools to come in that meet the charter school requirements, then parents will choose the best virtual schools for their children, and the market can take care of this issue. So parents protect their children. As you know, the parents on this committee, you know that you care about your children more than anyone else does. And if we open up the markets, then I think this won't even be an issue, and we don't need a task force to look into this. And if you do have a task force, I think it's extremely important that you have an unbiased task force and that you include parents and other qualified individuals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cafori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here today representing Insight Schools, which is an Oregon-based institution. It's located in Portland. We are a virtual alternative school, not a charter school at this time. You heard a lot of very emotional testimony this morning, and I would like to bring us back to some kind of a summary, a little rationality, take a look at all the emotion off and see where we are. I have just basically two points to make. Number one, the bill is not needed. There's no necessity to have legislation to have a task force. The bill is not necessary in order to have a task force, especially the one that you have heard so much how flawed it is. We think that it's a good idea to have a study. In fact, we've been pushing for a study for a number of years. We think the governance issue is bears some review, and it may be that there's a different process for governance than what we have now. And I would like to have an unbiased take a look at that, and I think we can do that by a study that doesn't come from this legislation. Secondly, there's no need for a moratorium. As you heard this morning, the 50% rule will still be in effect. The State Board has given only two waivers in the last number of years. So if nothing happens in this bill between now and next February, nothing's going to change in the real world. There's no need for a moratorium. And especially, there's no need for a two-year moratorium. there is no purpose served by a two-year moratorium except one purpose, and that is if your desire is to close schools. If you don't want to close schools, a two-year moratorium gains you nothing. If you want to close schools, what a two-year moratorium does is it takes those people who are opposed to virtual schools and puts them in a situation where they can win by sitting back and not engaging in the conversation. No action represents a benefit for them. Not only is the bill not needed, Mr. Chair, it's not wanted. If you look at the independent organizations that have taken a look at this issue, yeah, all of them oppose the bill. All four newspapers that have editorialized on it, the Willamette Week, the Oregonian, the Mail Tribune, the Eugene Register Guard, oppose the bill. You take a look at the organizations that have no dog in the fight, Chalkboard, Stand for Children, the Oregon Business Association, they are all opposing this bill. I don't think there's any neutral organization, Mr. Chair, not one, in the state of Oregon that supports this bill. The bill is not wanted by anyone except the sponsors. And lastly, I was fascinated by Representative Bailey's comment to the children this morning. Come and see the legislative process at work. See how the legislature makes decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to send a lesson to those children and to their parents about how the legislature works. And you have the choice of what that lesson is going to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you. We just have a letter from the Oregon PTA, by the way, which supports this bill. I just thought you should know that.
Other? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. Since we adjourned before, and I'm getting some feedback. Is this thing turned up? No? Okay. I'll just ignore it. We've had three additional sign-ups, and it looks like there are four people. Dan, and is it Siobhan Christensen?
Yes.
Please come forward. Marshall Koba. That's three.
Okay. Okay, why don't you sit here?
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Dan Christensen. I'm a recently elected school board member in the Gresham Barlow District, and brand new to that. I won by 16 votes, so school board races aren't supposed to be exciting, but mine was.
So when we tell people that every vote counts, you know that that's
every
true.
Every vote counts, right. I learned that the part of our district goes into Clackamas County, and I will never again ignore those voters again. I nearly lost because I didn't pay attention to those people. So if you're running again, pay attention to all of your voters. I definitely recommend it. I really don't have a dog in this fight, other than the fact that I did tell my voters that I would fight for increased choice in public education. And that's why I took the time to come today. My children have attended, they've been homeschooled. My children have been private schooled. My children have attended public schools, brick and mortar schools, and more recently have been in virtual online schools. I've loved about the state of Oregon that I've had so many public school options to provide my children as we found the right fit for them. You had asked this morning about Odyssey Wear. I happen to have a child here who's been in the Clackamas Web Academy, she had asked a chance to address you, so I'm going to give her that. She's going to be a paragraph of mine here. And I also have two sons who are with me here today who came out of the Clackamas Web Academy and then went into the Clackamas Middle College through the online program. And my oldest son, who is here with us, graduated. He got his high school diploma about a week ago, and then 10 days later, he got his Associate of Arts degree, all as part of this program. I'm very, very bullish on the notion of maximizing the choices available to our students. My children have benefited greatly from having maximum number of choice. And so I'm going to defer a paragraph of my time to her, and I will be brief right after that. This is Siobhan.
Siobhan.
Hi, my name is Siobhan. I am 11 years old, and I used to go to a public school in Gresham from first grade to fourth grade. And then I take dance, and I like to sing in front of people. And so I didn't get that much of that chance to do that because I was in public school. And so when I went to Clackamas Web Academy, I had more time to do dancing in front of elders at retirement homes and things like that. After going to Clackamas Web Academy, I learned much more than I did in public school. And my two brothers went to this homeschool, and with the help of my teacher, Jeff Wheeler, and Odyssey Ware, I learned much more, and I would like to stay in CWA, Clackamas Web Academy, if I can, because of my loving friends and teacher. Thank you.
Now, I have been told that my children's position in Clackamas Web Academy is not at all in jeopardy, and I have no reason to not believe that, although given some of the ambiguities that I've heard about this bill today, I do have a few doubts coming out of this as to what the status will be 1 and 2 and 3 years down the road for students who choose this. One of the two issues that I've not heard addressed real strongly here today, one is the limitation of online charter schools, 7th grade and up, and which of course would exclude students like my daughter, who's in the 5th grade, going into the 6th grade. In the future, apparently that would not be an option available to someone like her, who, as she said, she's a dancer and she has auditions and performances and training, and the schedule has fit very nicely. That option would not be available out there. I hate to see that go away. Another issue that's not addressed real strongly here is the issue in the legislation that addresses that parents would have to go to their district to receive permission. I hope you can appreciate there's something repugnant about the idea that I as a parent would have to go hat in hand to a government official and ask for your kind permission to do what I believe is best for my children. I mean, look at it this way. Now, which of you, if you have children, would tolerate being required to come to me and a committee of my fellow musicians? And yes, I've been a professional musician. I'm a recovering musician at this point. It's a glamorous way to starve. Children, don't try it. What if you had to come to a committee of fellow musicians and receive permission before enrolling your child in piano instruction? You feel your child has talent and aptitude for piano, but frankly, we're professional musicians and you are not. We are far more qualified than you to determine what is best for your child musically. Further, we feel that if you must give your child music instruction, they should learn clarinet from one of our members here in your own area rather than piano from an instructor across town. And guess what? Our decision's final. As you can tell, that reeks a little bit of arrogance, and I'm going to tell you, just as a dad sitting out here reading this legislation, it reeks of arrogance. It reeks of we know best for your children. I find it ironic that our society has codified into law the right of any woman of childbearing age to freely choose the destiny of her own child, even to the point of choosing whether it lives or dies. But once that baby is born, suddenly we assume she doesn't have the competence to rightly choose what is best for her child. So we're going to interfere with that choice with legislation such as that is before this committee today. I think another irony is that the notion that online charter schools are somehow providing a backdoor voucher system for homeschoolers. I see it exactly the opposite. There's so many, like our family, we tried homeschooling, and we were so thrilled when we could move from homeschooling to a public school option. This has been wonderful to have a public school option, part of our great system of public schools, where we can send our kids. And so this really provides a bridge, not out of the brick-and-mortar school and into homeschooling, but it provides a bridge the other direction that did not exist prior to this, and it's very important that we keep this for our children. And I feel that rather than taking students offline, more should be doing to get more students into online learning applications, such as those offered by Oregon's online public charter schools. You know, with the budget crisis, and we got this ubiquitous lament about class sizes being too large, online charter schools offer a highly cost-effective answer to this problem. As I now go to sit on a school board and we talk about the issues of infrastructure and the cost of maybe building new buildings, there are thousands of classrooms right now available across the Gresham-Barlow district. One of them's at my house. We have thousands of classrooms available, and we need to become innovative within our districts and outside of our districts in beginning to develop these technologies to provide greater options at a lower cost to the taxpayers. I find it interesting, I've heard testimony here today that one of the problems is that money designated for a district is now being diverted to someplace else. Respectfully, that money isn't meant for the district, it's meant for the students in that district. It's meant for their education. And if the students in that district are being educated and they're being educated in the state of Oregon, and the money for that education is coming from the state of Oregon and staying in the state of Oregon. Frankly, why is it any of your business where I choose to school my child within the public school system of the state of Oregon? They're my children. I know best. And I know you're smart, wonderful, intelligent, loving, caring people. But I've been given this responsibility. And I want the maximum number of choices. And that's why I'm here, is as a dad and as representing these voters that voted for me. Technologically, I feel like, you know, we should be doing more to get them online. I feel like technologically, this bill represents a bold leap into the 1980s. It takes us back to an era when, okay, everything's in the brick and mortar because somehow we think that's better. Now, the technologies, Siobhan had a teacher come to the house once a week. The school provided her with a laptop. She had field trips. She had lab opportunities to get it online. She had more individualized attention here, and the class size was not an issue. Let's be clear. The OEA is a private organization. It represents 47,000 members. And on their website, in support of this legislation, they expressed concern about, quote, public resources ending up as private gain. Well, what is this legislation other than an attempt to consolidate more public resources to end up as gain for members of a private organization? Their interest is not the 3 million people who attend or have family members attending Oregon Public Schools. That's not their job. I don't fault the OEA and other groups behind this bill. Their job is to represent their members and seek to give them advantage. Of course they're going to promote bills like this. But your job, representatives, and my job now as an elected official, is to represent the hundreds of thousands of Oregon families who need more, not less, choice in education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for the two Christiansons? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony very much. And then we'll hear from Mr. Koba and following him from Wendy Dominguez. Wendy here? Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the Oregon Virtual Academy, a virtual public charter school that was granted a waiver by the State Board of Education last June after a nine-month process with working with the board. We opened in September of 2009 and are currently serving approximately 310 students in a charter relationship with the North Bend School District. I also represent K-12 Incorporated, which is the nation's leader in online innovation, currently helping to educate students in 22 states throughout statewide virtual programs. We have approximately 56,000 students across the country. We'd like to take just a second on two issues that came up this morning about how these schools are not regulated, and I think Mr. Wilkes from the Connections of the Orca Academy did a very good job of explaining all of the reporting and all of the requirements that we are responsible for as a public charter school, and then the suggestion that this is a complex issue. I tend to believe, and I've been suggesting this all session, that I think like-minded people who sit around the table for the next 2 hours in a good faith effort could come up with a solution to this issue and move us forward and take care of the problem and wouldn't need the next 6 months. What I'd like to do is take a few moments to try to give some historical perspective to this discussion. And what I've handed out is a timeline. I know there was another one handed out this morning, and maybe we'll have a little different perspective on some of the key dates and things that happened. I've been with K-12 since October of 2005, or approximately 1.5 months following the passage of Senate Bill 1071 in the 2005 session. Ever since that time, as you can imagine, I've been playing catch-up as we were not part of the final negotiations or of the discussion that led to the outcomes in Senate Bill 1071, nor were any of the other colleagues that have testified here today. Our involvement in the past 3 years is taking us from the 05 interim, the 07 session, the 07-08 interim, and where we worked with the State Board of Education, and now into the 2009 session. My experience has been, and I'm comfortable in stating, that there has been a great deal of misinformation on this subject. And while I don't have time to respond to all of it, I hope this chronology summary will help you better understand why we, and I believe everyone in this room, are here this afternoon, and why it's important that we all begin to discuss this issue in good faith, so we can reach a quality policy outcome and not a limited political outcome. The students of Oregon, including my sophomore daughter, are ready and open to embrace this educational option. In 2005, Senate Bill 1071 was amended and passed late in the session. As I stated earlier, we were not in the room. As I understand it, And there may be some minor variations on this. There were a few major parties that were party to the final agreement on the bill. Along with Senator Devlin and the Speaker, the negotiations included one virtual school curriculum company and the traditional brick-and-mortar lobbyists. The agreement allowed the Oregon Connections Academy to open without limitations, and this was good for them, and it has proven to be very justified. Today they have about 2,800 students and are thriving. Students and parents are happy, and they continue to learn. At the same time, the 50% rule was implemented, which we see effectively closing the door to any similar online innovators to offer our curriculum to students. This barn door slammed shut following, because of the 50% rule, the opening of the Connections Academy, and we believe it was a win-win for those who participated in those discussions at that time. In addition, the Oregon Virtual School District was created. In 2007, we introduced House Bill 2037 to initially remove the 50% rule, but then amended it to implement quality and accountability provisions. We saw a lot of the discussion at that time. Opponents of virtual education were using the Colorado audit as one of the reasons why that there should be quality and accountability, and we stand behind that and support that in every state in the country. We worked closely with the House Education Subcommittee on Innovation, and that bill ultimately passed from the House Education Committee to the Ways and Means Committee, where it died. In June of 2008, after 10 months of discussion with the State Board of Education, the State Board approved our waiver, and I don't believe, as was suggested this morning, it was an opportunity of accident, nor do I believe it was a loophole in the law. I believe there was a number of very bright and involved participants in the drafting of Senate Bill 1071, and actually I first was told about the opportunity to go for a State Board waiver from lobbyists from the traditional school lobby, who was very familiar with it and was actually, I believe, at that time expecting people to use that option. In 2009, you can see there were a number of bills introduced, including a couple more to remove the 50% rule. In regards to Senate Bill 767, we have found ourselves on the outside looking in on the formation of the original bill, in the drafting of the amendments, in the policy discussion surrounding the amendments. We are and have been opposed to this bill since it was printed. We feel it creates a task force without any pro-virtual school advocates, parents, or administrators, places in statute outcomes prior to the task force meeting and recommendations, and the timing of it will close two schools currently operating if no action is taken in February 2010. But looking forward, the chronology goes into the summer, fall, into February 2010. As we see the future, we are very concerned about the makeup of the task force. We feel the imbalance in its makeup will leave us opposing the legislation that will develop, and oddly enough, continue to the strange reality that the virtual school advocates, including parents and students, will be opposing the virtual school legislation in February 2010. As an optimist, and I remain one as a lobbyist, I look to find the positives in most areas. As such, I've even found some positives, if I can, in the 50% rule. I believe the rule has gotten us to where we are today, which is considering Senate Bill 767. It has slowed the expansion of virtual school options, which has significantly limited good programs like ours, but maybe possibly has also limited the expansion of some bad programs who may have come into the state. We are now able, in June of 2009 going forward, to adopt best practices from other states and create an Oregon system that allows parent choice, innovation in the classroom, models that work well with traditional schools, and that offer students the best of both worlds and allow Oregon to catch up with other progressive states. This will move us beyond the stalemate of the past 4 years in a thoughtful and deliberative manner. In conclusion, we encourage you to slow this bill, if there is to be a bill, and to amend it to allow a more fair representation of traditional and online advocates. As you can see, the past 4 years have been busy but with limited movement. While this limitation, we believe, was an intended outcome of the 50% rule, it has kept many students who have benefited from using an online option of their choice. We look forward to, again, if there is legislation in February 2010, we look forward to supporting it. But we need fairness on the task force to gain fairness in 2010 in that legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Koba? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you
very much. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairman Barnhart, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to speak. My name is Wendy Dominguez, and my son is an 11-year-old who's just finished his sixth grade year with ORCA. He moved over there in November. He is an extremely bright boy who was identified as a TAG student in third grade, but even before that, as preschool from that point and on up, many even teacher friends of mine said, this boy learns differently, you're going to have a difficult time keeping him challenged. And indeed, that has proven true. Every year as he's gone through at the public school, which where he was up through fifth grade, has become increasingly stressful. For him, because he is so bright, he's very easily bored and disengaged and distracted. So what we found is that he would come home and we would be reteaching from 4 until 10 p.m. at night, most days, and it was extremely stressful for our family. We own our own business as well, and so it had a great toll on all of us. And Ben was having more and more stomach aches, as someone earlier said. We had a similar experience, not sleeping well. Managed to get through fifth grade because of additional programs like music and an ambassador program last year and serving on a safety committee and the TAG program itself that kept him involved and excited, but still working from 4 till 10 at night. And this year he started in the sixth grade at the local middle school. And it was disastrous for us, with 1,100 students, close to 30 in his class, no opportunity for one-on-one time. In addition to that, he was harassed by a child continuously. This was an autistic child who was very violent in his nature, the way he spoke, even things he put out on the Internet. And we approached the principal and counselors about this, and basically were told, well, this boy has a right to be here, too. But this boy would, even though they weren't in the same classes, would wait for Ben to get off the bus, follow him from class to class, and it was terrifying. And we got to the point where we absolutely felt we had no other choice but to pull him out of public school in order that he have an opportunity to thrive and to get an excellent education. Ben felt that public school, always the classes moved too slowly for him. And in math, he was falling behind because he was not interested. And he tends to also work more slowly. Since we have moved into ORCA, he has absolutely excelled in math and is going to be working in the gifted program in math next year. He worked a year ahead in language arts and is continuing on with the gifted program a year ahead in language arts next year. He is very active in the community. For his second year this year, he taught a third grade class in the local public school where he's still involved, how to use computers and to do research and to create programs using everything he knows about Apple computers. He's very highly advanced technologically. He'll be taking a high school class in electronics this summer. And given that we're now doing Oregon Connections Academy, he has time to get involved with robotics, karate, and other activities that we didn't have time for before. He did not miss one day of school with ORCA, no stomach aches, and he's absolutely thriving. I am a firm believer that children learn differently, and though I believe that the public schools are a great place, the brick-and-mortar schools are a great place for many children, they don't serve my son well. And I feel that for us to have a thriving state economy, we really need to make sure that all of our children are well-educated and be open to alternatives so that each one can have a fit that meets their needs. So I urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 767 so we can continue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Dominguez? Well, we appreciate that you and the other parents who have been open with us about your family's history and your children's needs as we look at these bills. I think it is safe to say that every member of this committee, and I think probably every member of the legislature, is very, very interested in making sure that we have that we promote the kinds of programs that our children need. We've heard today, I mean, that you're following a theme, and I don't remember whether you were here this morning or not, but you're following a theme of other parents talking about kids whose needs are a bit different from the average, and the result is that the programs you found have worked for you. We appreciate your testimony very much. Thank you. Tricia Smith and Chuck Bennett.
Chairman.
Please.
Thank you. Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Well, Mr. Chairman, after spending this morning and then part of this afternoon, I was reminded again why it's so interesting to lobby the education issues, whether you're on one side, the other, or kind of caught in the middle on issues like this. It's a fascinating discussion, and the individual stories are both moving and informative, and I've found the whole discussion very interesting. I found this discussion interesting during the past several years as well, Mr. Chairman, and it's one of the reasons we're supporting 767 being grossed. Mr. Chairman, we view this as an attempt. Sometimes you wonder how artful the attempts are, but an attempt to resolve a batch of unresolved statutory issues, policy issues around this new form of education. We are very interested in online school being available to every student in Oregon. We are interested in continuing our strong support for a robust school choice system. Charter schools, private schools, homeschool, public school, and now we have this new form of education that is increasingly available to students, online education. Unfortunately, online education has had to try to put itself into the existing funding system and school policy system without a clear statutory construct in which to operate. The result is each online school that steps forward has to come at you as an alternative, or come at the system as an alternative, as a charter, as a whatever, unfunded state system, etc. All we're, I think, asking for, or I hope this is how you understand what we're asking for, is that this issue be clarified statutorily and that guidance be given to the administrative agencies involved on how to deal with each one of these consistently and appropriately, and we hope successfully. This is not, from our perspective, this is not an attempt to put an end to this kind of education. But there are reasonable questions about funding, about the portion of the formula allocated to this type of school versus brick-and-mortar schools, about transparency and accountability for public funds used in financing this type of education, the basic accountability for success of students, although after testimony today, you really have to believe that that kind of accountability plays itself out extremely well in public, at least. These are both charming, informed, intelligent young people we've heard from today who are engaged in this kind of education. I'm reminded of how well homeschoolers do. Our organization has been very interested in the homeschool movement, very involved in assisting how well private school students do, how well our public school students do. It reminds me, we ought to probably bring in more public school kids once in a while just to let you hear them. We have a lot of kids doing extremely well in our entire education system. But, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I hope you'll understand that despite all of the Sturm und Drang around all of this, this is merely a discussion of how to deal with a new type of education that has been arriving at the state board's doorstep on a steady basis over the past couple of years, one application after the other. And you'll understand that when it is being dealt with solely by waiver, it seemed perfectly reasonable to ask that there be a thoughtful discussion, a set of policy discussions that arrive at an outcome that gives everyone some certainty and understanding on how this kind of educational system will be implemented in the state. But, boy, don't let me leave any doubt. This form of education will be implemented in this state. This is not a question about whether. It's a question about how, and how to do it fairly and how to do it best. And that's all this discussion is about. I've also included a copy of a press release from the Federal Department of Education. I hope helps clarify the discussion on federal funds. I think there are folks who have in all good faith expressed real concern to some of you regarding the impact of legislation we might be looking at here on federal funding. I hope this helps clarify that Oregon is well ahead of many states in the union in our support and our statutory structure around charter schools, and that we are in no way trying to cap that or put an end to that. We're trying to figure out, is online education best handled as a charter education, as part of the regular public education? How should it be dealt with? We thought we had it dealt with when this was originally ORCA and the state virtual school district were originally conceived, that we'd have by now a full-blown state virtual school district. That just hasn't happened. The funding hasn't been there. But anyway, I hope you'll support the bill. I hope you understand it's offered to you in good faith, and that we can proceed from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Right on time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. I'm here to testify in support for Senate Bill 767. We've heard many things about this bill today, and I won't hold you very long with my testimony. I would only like to offer a couple of things. First of all, education is one of, it may be the most highly regulated government activity that there is. I've spent a great deal of time this session working with legislators on new regulations for education, all to protect children and to assure quality in education. We generally support the effort of cooperation between school districts and the legislature in providing high-quality education to all of our children. We support 767 because we believe that this particular type of education is a huge and growing form of education that needs a strong and serious look. We need to decide as a body what we should do with virtual online schools, particularly full-time virtual online schools, and in our opinion, particularly private sector schools that are being funded by public sector money. A lot of the discussion that you heard today was about whether or not a particular child or a particular parent should be able to choose the schools that they want to go to. We believe they should choose the schools that they want to go to. The question is not whether or not they can choose to go to these charter schools. It's whether or not the kids in other school districts will pay for that choice or whether they will pay for it on their own. Parents in Oregon has very broad authority for parents to choose the educational opportunities for their children. You can choose private schools, you can choose home schools, you can choose public schools, you can move around, you can ask for transfers. There are many ways to choose schools. The issue with virtual online charter schools for us is the issue of how they're funded. There is very little regulation at this point on this type of education, and without some look at them and some decision about those things that we think that this task force would provide, we hope this task force will provide, we don't think you can make good decisions. We think the task force is a good idea so that you can have a fuller discussion of this particular type of education. We think that online support and classes are definitely a part of of education. We wish all children had access to those things. What we're doing right now is choosing between children, and we shouldn't be doing that. Your job is to provide a common system of schools for children, not to provide a good education for some at the expense of others. And we think that without strong legislation and a good strong look at virtual charter schools, that's what we're doing. So we hope that you will support Senate Bill 767.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the two of you. After listening to the testimony this morning, I've spoken with some others of my colleagues and had some amendments drafted in the break before the two meetings, and wondered if I could outline them for you and see if you could be supportive. The amendment would do two things. The first would be to expand the membership of that task force to add four more members, so it would now be 17. That's a really big panel. A member who is a board member of a public charter school that offers online instruction, a member who is an administrator of a public charter school that offers online instruction, a member who represents the State Board of Education, and then fourth, a member who is a superintendent of a school district that does not sponsor a public charter school that offers online instruction but has been impacted by public charter schools that offer online instruction. And then the second piece would go to, if you were here this morning, we had some back and forth about whether or not it was clear enough in the bill to ensure that no students would be displaced in September. And this would add language into Section 17 that just proactively states that a student who was enrolled on May 1st, 2009 in a public charter school that did not comply with the requirements of ORS 338-125-2B, i.e. the 50% rule, may continue to be enrolled in the public charter school. Would those amendments be amenable to you if the committee was willing to indulge such amendments?
Ms. Chair, Representative, very much so. After listening to testimony and over the past several weeks talking with colleagues in the lobby on both sides of this, I think these are going to be necessary. I, in fact, had looked at the list, noticed there was a superintendent on the list, and figured we'd be asking Superintendent Temple to take that slot. I mean, it's one of those where we really need to have somebody. And in this case, I'm really pleased to hear you're looking at two representatives from online charter school organizations. I don't know how you could do it without that amendment at this point. I think it's real important. I was sorry to hear that it came across that this was designed to exclude that interest. That's not what I think any of us had in mind. As to the second portion, absolutely. If there is any question about my understanding consistently on this bill has been that the SIO experiment would be allowed to continue through this process, at least through the, not in interrupting someone's school year. That would be, I think, really unreasonable. My understanding was that was covered by the Attorney General's opinion. To the extent that that's unclear, it needs to be clarified that that is not what's going on here. So I certainly wholeheartedly support your amendments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, I certainly support expanding the task force. I have I think that it may be a little legislator heavy and a little less a little interest group light myself, and so adding other folks as you've described, we don't have a bit of problem with. If your second amendment is a permanent waiver.
No, it goes into Section 17, and okay. Section 18 sunset Section 17, so it would just fit with the moratorium.
Then I have no problem with that either.
Were you planning to distribute that?
Yes. It's the B-29 amendment dated today.
29. It's an interesting number, B-29. Okay. Well, thank you. Representative Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks. Either one of you can answer or both, although it's to the point you just made about this as you call it, the SIO experiment, and not to do anything with Senate Bill 767 that would necessarily derail that. That's not the goal here. And I guess my question, as I asked the question earlier, given that that's true, why don't we remove Section 13C, which seems to only apply to the Oregon Connections Academy?
Sorry, I'm kind of blind as a bat here. Yeah, well, let's... I think the discussion, and I think it's one, I don't recall, Representative Bruin, if you were here when the bill or the law allowing ORCA to proceed was passed, but at the time, my recollection of it, and certainly I can be corrected, was this was never intended to be a permanent situation. This was open for further discussion, and I think that's what this is the further discussion to take a look at what's happened. And I have full confidence in ORCA and its board of directors, in Superintendent Temple, in the SIO board to present a compelling case. I think they have so far presented a very compelling case for continuation. And that they would be just subject to the changes that would occur if the legislature accepted recommendations from a task force. I don't see any reason why this spells the end.
Yes, but can we have that discussion, that further look, without 13C? Can't we do those two things without calling them out specifically?
I don't think you can. No, I really don't. I think that part of the discussion is the future of this particular kind of charter school, and I have no doubt that in the discussion there will be changes that will occur that will have to be written into their contract, into their whatever the mechanism. I don't want to somehow guess that I have any idea how this thing will play out, but my assumption is that it will result in some changes, and I think that it's only appropriate that the changes not be inhibited by some sort of statutory barrier to them being implemented, if that seems reasonable. That's how I'm reading it. It's not put them out of business. I think it's going to in some way change the relationship. I hope it changes the relationship between SIO School Board and the Board of ORCA, or, you know, that those kinds of things need to be part of what's discussed on the table. I think we're going to have a lot more of these, frankly, and I think SIO and ORCA represent our a real test tube of what this all looks like, for good or ill, you know, and both probably.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess either one of you could weigh in on this, and again, I want to say thank you for being here. And interesting conversation, and certainly a very important one, so that sparks sometimes some tough questions. I've heard throughout the day, we've all heard lots of comments about we need to take a strong look here. We have accountability issues, issues of maybe parents working can't be here. We have governance issues. Transparency issues, certainly I, especially accountability and transparency, I'm all over that because it's my tax dollars too that fund this, and quite frankly my son's in a public school and that's by choice, a brick and mortar public school. So I hear all those comments. I'm seeking, quite frankly, seeking to hear some examples of that, not just we have these issues. What are they? What are the issues? I'm really wanting to wrap my arms around this happened here, or we have these struggles here, or anything like that. I'm looking for some concrete examples.
Well, Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I apologize. I did not come prepared and would be glad to memorialize you with concrete examples. I think, though, if you're looking for gotchas from me, I'm not a gotcha kind of guy on this issue. If that's what you're looking for, it is an understanding that we can look at all, where every dollar goes, where every how people are paid. It's you look at us. You know this better than I do. We look at this at public education in the minutest of detail. This is not an area, whether it's ORCA or it or the private organizations where we can look at the kind of minute detail involving the dollars and where they are and how they're spent and is this the right amount, et cetera, that has just not been resolved, and it's not available. I think you made a good point, I believe it was you this morning, on, but we don't look at the textbook information from one corporation or laptop information and their books from another. I think this is different. I think this is where public dollars assigned to per student to a district are accounted for, and we anticipate the kind of accounting. But I think just looking at it broadly, but I would be glad to sit down and try to find specific problems. I don't think it's a problem. I think it's we just don't have it. It's just a general, we don't know, we don't have the information.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, if I might add to that, it is our intention, this is a new industry in Oregon, relatively new industry, and yet it has the potential to take into its hands a huge number of Oregon school children and a large amount of K-12 state school fund money. That's happening at a time where we are looking at more than a half a billion dollar cut to K-12 education, where we are looking under every couch cushion for every nickel. And the problem with the waiver is that that is the impact on other districts, on those home districts, when we are so dramatically,
there's the couch cushion, right?
So dramatically negatively impacting schools all over the state because we don't have the funding for them. And I was, as I was listening to the testimony this morning, I was thinking, I wonder what the conversation would be like here in this room today if we had $8.2 billion in the state school fund to spend on the education of all of our children. In the first place, we probably wouldn't have parents talking about how they had to pull their kids out of school because they had so many kids in the classroom, their kids couldn't get an education. Maybe all kids in school could get the kind of education that these parents are asking for their children. It would be dramatically different. But that's not the situation we're in. We're in a situation where we cannot spare a dollar. And to allow so many dollars to go out the door without any accountability or transparency, without any look at these things, we think is a mistake.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Very briefly, if you would, and then I'd like to move on.
Okay, thank you. I have questions.
Thank you. Please
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
I'm trying to think back my school board experience, how if I wanted to see what's going on with ORCA, how I would do that. And I guess my first step, but I'd go to Gary Temple, knock on his door, and say, I want to see the records. So I guess maybe this is more of a comment. I'm sorting through that, and I'm looking for what's not available. Because I do also want to make sure that information is available. And just real briefly, I'm not looking for gotchas for sure, because I think in all of our school systems, homeschool, private, public, whatever, we've got decent people trying to do decent things, and sometimes we just disagree on things. But I also think in the context of this conversation, it's very important to remember that we're not taking dollars out of the K-12 budget to fund something over here. We're taking dollars, we're not even taking dollars out, we're using K-12 dollars to fund public education or education over here. And whether that's online or whatever, we're not pulling it out of the system to do something different. We're pulling it out to still educate kids. And I think that's important in the context of this conversation. Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I think that's an important point. Representative Paul.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you for your indulgence of all the questions today. I am a sponsor of...
That's part of my job, Representative.
No, and I've tried to not talk, but I am a sponsor of this bill. I am signed on to this bill, and I just feel like that there has been ample statement on the proponents of this bill that we are seeking to hit the pause button and take a hard look at these things. Which is, I think, the reason why there are no gotcha examples, because the people who are supporting this legislation aren't in a game of gotcha. They just want to understand where tens of millions of dollars are going to. So I'm wondering if you guys could just one more time further emphasize that is the fact of this legislation, that it is, in fact, the intent of this legislation, and then talk to us a little bit about the kind of oversight that some of us feel like we need to have with regards to public dollars, the kind of oversight we see in other contexts that we're not seeing in this context, so that we as legislators are better stewards of the public fisc and the public dollars that are at play here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Call, I think you've summarized probably what either of us would say very well. That's what we're after here, and we're also, I think, trying to, and there is no, you kind of hate even talking about it, because it does, and I think Representative Springer hits on it as well. By asking the question, it suggests there's something wrong. That is not what we're trying to do. It is by asking and just posing this broader policy construct, we're just making sure that when this issue comes either in front of the state board or in front of a local school board or the public, we hope this task force will find the following, and it's listed in the bill, the following information is the kind of information that should proceed from a discussion around development of an online school system of some kind, whether charter or public or however else it comes together, and that it should meet at least the standards we expect of our public school system in terms of transparency, which from my experience is virtually complete. And if you ask the right questions, and I think you make a very good point, if you ask the right questions, readily available down to the absolute detail, and that all of that is readily available. And why I don't see how that in any way is a negative in terms of the discussion of this. Also that we look at the formula and how it works, and that we look at the kind of outcomes we expect of public education being guaranteed under this kind of educational system, and just sort of through the list, I guess. Right now, we just don't have all that in place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cole, I have been confused by some of the testimony indicating there is some onerous level of regulation in this bill. The only additional financial requirement is the demonstrated ability that the school have a sound financial management system in place. Why wouldn't we want that? Why shouldn't that should have been in the legislation from the get-go for any public entity like a charter school? And in terms of the quality standards, I think they are minimal, and they are certainly minimal compared to what students and schools, regular schools, are required to meet. And so expanding our education system in virtual schools, as we are doing, while we are contracting it in traditional schools, when traditional schools have higher standards than virtual schools, doesn't make sense to us.
Thank you. I would note that I introduced a bill in 2001 that would have accomplished the results you just described about the finances. That bill was not adopted. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bennett, have you been a part of the discussions that have gone on at the State Board on this issue?
Yes, I have, Representative.
How many hours do you think they've spent on this issue, Mr. Bennett? Would you care to characterize it?
Gosh, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, it has been many hours. It has been a really excellent discussion. The difficult, and it has been long. It has been regular because these waiver requests, right now this is, as you know, tending to be governed by a waiver system, are coming in on a regular basis now as interest in Oregon's fairly open system has attracted national interest as enterprises take a look at where potential income sources can be, and Oregon's a pretty good example right now. But they've really worked on it. They have worked on policy discussion. They've had numerous subcommittee meetings at the state board level. They have had a number of hearings in front of the board itself on each of the waivers. I wouldn't even hazard a guess except to say it's been very complete.
Mr. Chair, one
yes,
question.
Please.
If this bill were amended to read, the State Board of Education will answer these questions for us and come back with a report and specific recommendations to this legislature, would that be an acceptable way out of this?
Ms. Chair, Representative Berger, I have no doubt that's going to be part, if not
a No, that wasn't what I asked. Do we need a task force when we've got the State Department of Education and the Board of Education, who are volunteers, expert in ed policy matters, who are ready, willing, and able to make these kinds of decisions, and that by this bill, we are preempting that with a legislative task force, which doesn't have any parents on it, doesn't have any of the people who are intimately concerned about this issue on it. I'm really incensed that the work that they've done is being preempted by this legislation, and you're taking the brunt of my ill will.
You don't have to respond to that if you don't have to.
Because he's my city councilor, I can do this.
You don't want chickens in the yard, do you?
I will tell you, when I went to the classroom at Candelaria Elementary, they wanted to talk chickens.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 8 contains a series of, looks like, requirements, and I'm just wondering where those came from, whether they're acceptable to the virtual schools that are in business now, and why they're in this bill when it appears the task force is charged with the job of developing just those types of requirements.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, I'm not the best person to answer this question. I believe Ms. Wimmer testified this morning that this portion of the bill this is a hybrid bill. As you heard this morning, it's traveled an interesting route through this process, and what we tried to bring to you was the best of a half a dozen or so bills on the topic, and one of them was the bill that included these quality standards.
Yes, please.
Just to get to the point of it, if we're going to have a task force that's going to address these exact issues, why aren't these premature? Why are they in this bill?
Ms. Chair, I would suggest that Representative Bentz, the better witness is going to be Ms. Wimmer, but it does appear that, just looking at them very quickly, that what you're doing here is outlining the broad and, in many cases, very specific charge to the task force, I think, to try to be as inclusive as possibly the only, you don't leave it wide open, I guess. Me, you should ask her.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, also the main thrust of this section are things that we don't think should be waived by any public school operating under public money. For example, we believe that all schools should have, or school districts should have, a budget, a business plan, and a governance plan. Those are things that we think anyone operating under public money and under the assumption that they're educating our kids should be. Those are minimal standards, and so that's why they're included.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would note that on page 6, we go far beyond, or this language goes far beyond a broad standard when it talks about the actual elements of the plans in item K, L, and M. So that's just a remark, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 767 and open a work session on Senate Bill 767. Representative Gelser.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the -B29 amendment dated 61509.
Representative Gelser moves the B29 amendments to Senate Bill 767. Discussion to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that these are reasonable amendments for two reasons. First, I think we heard many concerns this morning about the representation on the board, and I think that this is a step towards creating some fairness in the representation on that board. It is a very, very large board. I know there are other people that people would like to see incorporated on the board, but managing size, I think, is something that's very important. And although we had testimony this morning that probably students are protected in 767, we also had testimony that that is everyone's intent, and it seems to me that just to be safe, it's better just to make that really clear so that we don't wake up on September 2nd and find out that that 1% chance that we were wrong comes true. I think this is a difficult issue for a lot of people because education is a very personal thing. Education can be a very emotional thing. I think for those of us that are on the panel that are parents, and many of us are parents or are about to become parents, we know from dealing with our own kids how passionate we get about finding out what's right for them. I've got four kids of my own, and they are all different. Their needs are all different, and we respond to them all in very different ways. I think we've heard that from these families today. I'm convinced that everyone that came to the dais to testify brought an important piece to the puzzle, and it's my hope that the outcome of this task force is what we're stating that it is, that it's a timeout, it's a pause on changing what we're doing so the ground isn't moving underneath us so we can figure out the governance pieces. And I just want to be clear on the record that it's my goal. I think that there are very significant issues about governance and finance and the way that these things work in the state of Oregon. It's growing really quickly, and I like to call that the man behind the curtain stuff, if you think about the Wizard of Oz. So I am interested, and I think it's very necessary for us to look at all that man behind the curtain stuff while at the same time protecting the student that is engaged in learning. And I think with appropriate representation on this board and oversight, and certainly I serve on the Education Committee, as does Representative Springer. In February, I look forward to the opportunity to wrestle with the items that come back from this task force. So I would urge adoption of these -29 amendments, and I hope it was mentioned earlier today about the civics lesson. I hope one of the lessons that the kids can learn taking away is that sometimes testimony does change outcomes, and it doesn't always get you all the way to where you want to be, but there's 90 people in this building just like there are millions of people in the state of Oregon, and we never have solutions that everybody agrees with. We just try to come up with what's most fair and what works for the most people.
Thank you. Other discussion on the -29. Representative Berger.
Question of Representative Gelser. In this proposal, is there a slot on for the parents, a parent?
There is not in this draft. There is not a spot for a parent, but there is a member who is a board member of a public charter school, and that person could end up being a parent. It would be a board member. I think the idea was making sure that each person is representing a broad range of interests rather than a singular family interest.
Thank you. To the amendment, I it's a huge improvement. I am deeply disappointed that there is no representation by a parent in this amendment, but it is a huge improvement to add these members. I fully appreciate that.
Thank you. Other discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the -29s? I don't see any. With that, the -29s are adopted. Representative Gelser.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 767 as amended by the B29 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 767 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Do you want to speak to your motion?
I think I've already
You've
said
enough.
You've done
it. Okay. Representative Bailey and then Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been quite a bit of discussion today, some of it emotional and for good reason, because clearly this bill is, and this topic is about the future, not only of education, but of our children. But I'm reminded in the discussion that this bill is also about the past. There was a
comment at one point during the testimony that this bill might be a bridge to the 1980s. I was in public school in the 1980s and had a, there's some laughter out there. I won't even tell you. Not even in the early part of the 80s, really. in fact, I just graduated from high school. No. But I had a fantastic public school education in Portland Public Schools with arts and music and PE and a well-rounded education. And I was in public school in the 1990s when the effects of Measure 5 came to pass and saw those programs gutted. And we have heard testimony today about some of the challenges with parents putting children in public schools. To me, the solution of public education is consistent, stable, adequate funding for our schools with great teachers and great resources. And as we look to the future on this bill, I think that online education will be an important component of our education system in the future for some types of needs and children. But I want to make sure that as we go forward that we're doing it with our eyes open. I think this bill accomplishes that, especially with the B-29s, which I think significantly improve the bill. I think the task force makes sense, and I am appreciative of the fact that this bill does not shut down schools now. So I'll be a yes vote.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been very compelling and interesting testimony. We have some really committed parents and children who have found their answer to help their students. And I think that it speaks to the fact that teaching and learning and students are all individuals, and each one has special needs, and there's some important work going on. I mentioned Councilor Bennett, who I was so hard on, is my city councilor. I did go and speak to fourth graders at Kendall Area Elementary School, which is in my district and which I happen to have graduated from. And as I'm walking down the hall, renewing acquaintance with that building, I glanced in the library, and there was not one book in there. All computers. We have to come to grips with the way information moves through our society. And virtual charter schools are a really important step forward for not just the students, but for all of us. And instead of putting on the pause button, I think we should have gone ahead and let the State Board of Education, who are expert and who has been working on this issue, go back to work on this and given them the authority and said, as a legislative body, you are the ones that need to go forth and deal with these issues. There are issues. I agree there are issues. This proposal to put a bunch of people who either already have a dog in the fight, already have a lockdown position, or are all new to the issues, this is the wrong venue. This is the wrong way to attack it. I can't support this bill, even with the improving amendments, because this is the wrong way to go to address the issues that are very real, and that while Oregon has been a leader in getting going on this, there's masses behind us, and we better come to grips with our future because kids are learning really well this way, and it is a really fine alternative to brick and mortar. These problems can be solved. I don't believe this bill is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think any bill I've signed on to this session has generated this amount of controversy, which is strange. Because I was just thinking how strange that is. Generally, controversy seems to follow me, but I think since the very first days of this session, since my name went on this bill, I have had people in my office at least once a week talking to me about this, lobbying me about this, with great concern, most oftentimes for their children's well-being. And I just want to make sure that, that everybody in this room knows that there is the attempt of this bill is to make sure that we are doing the right thing. Not simply that we're spending money wisely, but that we're making sure that your children are getting the education that they deserve and that they have coming to them, and that it is the best possible education that the state of Oregon can afford. I like Representative Bailey, went to school in the 80s and had access to a whole bunch of opportunities, but I also had access, like he do, to a changing environment, to a changing world in which school budgets were cut, the adequacy of our education changed. And what I want to make sure that we're doing always, and what my vote in this bill represents, is that we maintain our commitment to direct instruction in a classroom that is adequately funded to meet the children's needs in that classroom. That is my commitment. The other commitment is to make sure that for those children who don't quite fit that model, have access to an education that is adequate to meet their needs. And I'd just like to end on a slight anecdote. Right out of college, the first job that I really worked full-time on a salary with benefits was in an alternative school in East Multnomah County called Serendipity Center. It was a private institution, almost wholly funded with public school dollars. We educated children who had multiple mental diagnoses, oftentimes organic brain disorders to boot. These children faced very serious issues, and a traditional school did not meet their needs. One thing that always surprised me about that job was the excruciating amount of paperwork and oversight that went into the education of those children. There wasn't a day that went by that I did not spend between an hour or 2 hours documenting almost everything I did in that day with that child, because the state had made a commitment to those children to guarantee that there was adequate oversight of their education, and that simply because they were taking a non-traditional approach to that education, they would not be denied a rigorous oversight and access to the best education that they could possibly have. I think that this piece of legislation gets us, at least hopefully, down the road to that point, guaranteeing that the education that's being provided to your children is given the same rigorous oversight that we do in other contexts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just feel a great need to go on record here that I also attended the school, attended public schools in the 80s. It may have been the early 80s, but I did attend. catching some innuendo here. But on to what's important here. I can't support this bill, and I'll tell you exactly why, and before I go into that, I definitely have to extend great appreciation earnestly to Representative Gelser for not making it quite as bad, and I do appreciate that. Some progress has been made. That said, I don't think that this is the vehicle to address the broad brushstroke issues that have been talked about here today, and I've tried to dive down and drill down into that probably 3-4 times today, because if there's something going on with your tax dollars and my tax dollars that's not above board and it's not good and it's not right, I want to know about it, and I'm going to do something about it. But if I hear a great deal in this conversation of public school dollars being diverted to online, and that we're taking dollars from here, brick and mortar, over here, I sat on a school board. I love school boards. I said my son's in public school, and at this point, that's where he's going to stay. But we're not talking about school district dollars. We're talking about dollars used to educate kids. And if there's a different way that works better for kids and it's appropriate, and I do believe this is appropriate, then that's where the dollars need to be. And I'm very disconcerted with the conversation here many times today that we seem to be taking from this group of kids to give to this group of kids. We have an obligation to give to all of the kids, an absolute obligation to give to all of them. And this bill, quite frankly, and again, I sincerely appreciate the amendments, that's not what this bill feels like it's about. It really isn't. And so in that vein, I'm opposed to the bill, staunchly.
Thank you. Others?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gelser.
This is less to the content of the bill and more to the content of the day. I just wanted to extend my appreciation and amazement to all of the children in this room who have sat through many, many hours of testimony and have probably behaved better than most of us sitting at the dais up here. So thank you, and that's really remarkable. It says a lot about your parents, but it also says a lot about each of you.
Thank you. I'd like to join in that comment. We've heard a lot of testimony today by people who are frightened that we are about to close down an option that they think is critically important for their children. I will be extremely disappointed if that's what this bill does. What we need to do is we need to have a system of accountability that allows us to move forward into the new age. Representative Berger said we have to come to grips with the way information comes to our students, and I could not agree more. We absolutely must come to grips with that. The first way of reading web pages, browser, Mosaic, came out, I think, in 1993. It was approximately then. And here it is 16 years later, and we're talking about how to run an entire school on the Internet, essentially using the immediate descendants of Mosaic to do it. And I think that that Oregon has been caught out a bit with its system of oversight not ready to deal with this. Should not surprise anybody very much. We have found ourselves playing catch-up on that issue with the business energy tax credit bill, for example, trying to catch up with the way in which business tends to deal with that issue as well. I am very concerned that we not let this get away from us. We have seen the expenditure of a large number of dollars in the last few days by someone who is trying to influence votes here by buying ads in major newspapers and sending mail to residents of at least one legislative district. That's expensive. And it certainly wasn't one of the nonprofit charter schools, because they don't have the funds to do that, and they're not allowed to. I don't know who did it, but it's an indication that there's big money to be made in this kind of situation. It is critically important that Oregon do proper oversight on the expenditure of public funds. This bill is a step in the right direction to get us there. I want the very best for all of your students. I believe we can get there. I believe that we're not talking about reducing choice, but making sure that those choices work well not only for your students, but also for the other students in our public school systems. And with that, I would ask the clerk to call the roll. The colleagues, the motion is on sending Senate Bill 767 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As amended. Thank you. As amended. Senate Bill 767, as amended, with the B-29 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Please.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Broome.
No.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Hall.
Aye.
Representative Breed.
Aye.
Representative Wiley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Chair Barnhart.
Aye. Motion having received the required majority is adopted. The bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gelser, will you carry?
Yes.
Representative Gelser will carry. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to serve notice of possible minority report.
Thank you. Representative Gelser serves notice of a possible minority
report. That was Representative Berger.
I'm sorry. I did it again, didn't I?
Okay. We hang together.
For those of you who don't know, I have been mixing up their names all session. Representative Berger.
serves notice of a possible minority report.
It's because we were both in public schools in the 90s.
It must have been. In different roles, I see.
Yeah. Educators?
Is there anything else on this work session? With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 767. Committee, I'll see you in the morning. Check the time on the posting, and the committee's adjourned.
Is that the official word?